Good morning, Loretta, and welcome to our studio again.
Oh, good morning, Miriam. I love being here.
Yeah. Recently, you started with the readings of Savitri. Could you maybe share with us what is your plan with this?
Yes, my plan is to read all of Savitri, but I don't know what order it's going to be read in, because when the radio asked me to start reading Savitri, I got a really clear inner indication to start with Book 7.
Mm-hmm.
Book 7 is, Sri Aurobindo has entitled it, the Book of Yoga, and it's the Book of the Mother's Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Sri Aurobindo gives his own yoga. It's very long and it's very detailed. But in Book 7, it's kind of encapsulated. He touches on everything, but not in so much detail.
Mm-hmm.
But the Book of Yoga, as it's set forth in both Sri Aurobindo's sadhana and Mother's sadhana, is the yoga of Sri Aurobindo and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the first stage to be reached, which Mother says all the time and Sri Aurobindo says all the time, is to find our soul. So, and then the second stage is to receive the universality of the cosmic consciousness and have it acting through you. So in Book 7, both of those things happen to Savitri.
Yeah, true. So you started with that one, and you will probably go with the flow. So to read the whole of it, it's a long...
Good.
And
I love it.
Complex thing. So you would be coming weekly, twice?
Once or twice. It depends. Mm-hmm. I've been coming twice to make sure the radio had a small backlog of things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I decided I ought to know what I was going to read next, and what came to me was Book 6,
mm-hmm.
which is the Book of Fate, where Sri Aurobindo...
That's what we need now, yeah.
That's it. Well, the answers to all the, you know, this one of the cantos is called The Way of Fate and the Problem of Pain. So Sri Aurobindo was giving a lot of wisdom that is not particularly directed towards the steps to take when you do the yoga or the things that could happen to you when you do the yoga, but what makes things the way they are and what's going to happen to them.
What is your feeling? What's going on in the planet? Because the way I perceive it, actually, these shifts, and since you mentioned the pain, and also the ascension or to change from one dimension to another dimension, does bring some problems, in some cases pains with it. So how do you see?
I see it at the moment the way I actually read something this morning in one of Sri Aurobindo's letters. In a book called Champaklal's Treasures, where he brings out all these unknown letters of Sri Aurobindo. And Sri Aurobindo is writing to someone, and he says, there are two things that are going on. First of all, he says, people are trying to do the yoga, and they try to do things according to their own conceptions, their own idea of the way things should go.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I don't use his words, but when they mess themselves up trying to do this, he goes in there with his consciousness and he straightens it out.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that the force that's descending is here and radiating everywhere. And it will go to any instrument that's ready for it to express it. You don't have to be here, you don't have to be doing the yoga, you don't have to be anything in what we see as the outward form of that we're trying to do because we're here. could be anywhere and anything. If your instrument is ready, it will come into you and express itself through you, and you will grow and you will be at the service of the new force. So the other thing that Sri Aurobindo said he was doing at that time was to try and, well, no, he was doing it to remove the obstacles in people's beings that hinder the kind of influx of the force and the expression of the force. And of course the obstacles are feelings, thinkings, attitudes, energy, kind of twisted up energies or negative energies or that. So that was his kind of encapsulated description of what was going on, and it is certainly still going on today.
The way I see it is accelerating since 58 and so forth. The point we are now, if I look around, actually the force is coming through either you want it or not, and it's going to change you either you want it or not. But the fact is that maybe with that process, because it's always when you change or transform, there is just a pain or something, you know, like the problems to actually accept it and really step into it, or you gonna fight towards it. And you, as you also said, the Sri Aurobindo wrote, you really want to perceive it with your mind and you want to set it up with the way you think it should be. And in that part, I think the basic thing is to surrender, no? That you really accept it how it comes. But the way I see it, at least the way I see it around me, and we're talking with the people, it's really, it's happening either you want it or not.
Yes, I mean, it has been since 58, and as far as I understand the writings, that's been the reason for all the troubles in the world. Resistance.
Marla.
Just resistance. You know, you use the word surrender to accept it. In the Mother, Sri Aurobindo uses the words a glad, strong, and helpful surrender. And I think you don't accept it, you give it away to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, because they were the complete embodiment of the force that is now acting. And so the force is them, in a sense. So we don't have to know the name of a person from whom the force came, or, you know, but there has to be that movement of the being to let it go. I think we are particularly fortunate because we have a template. We have a kind of, we have at least something we think we can follow that maybe doesn't mess it up as much as the way other people do it, until we get more clear and the thing really flows.
Admit I haven't read so much as I would want to for certain reasons, but do you remember, is there any way that maybe Sri Aurobindo or Mother, with her clear, usually it's more clear and more simple, how to actually deal with those residues of the past, which is like fear, still clinging on the control, to have a control over things, then certain attachments, emotional things? Is there any way how we deal with those? Because I see like the fear to lose the control over either group of people or over the cause or event around me is really causing problems to the people. Is there any way how to deal with that?
Is, you know what, it's always the same thing. It's amazing. They said kind of one thing. They said, you quiet your mind, you aspire for something higher, and you call on the higher thing, and you open to it and you let it happen. But the difficulty is remembering to do it. You see, that's the difficulty. And so the conscious thing I think that you can do is always try to go for the positive thing, because then the being is naturally open to something higher than it was open to 5 minutes ago.
That's for sure.
And so it's really, and one of my favorite things is something that the Mother wrote to Champa Klaw that I just love. She wrote, be simple, be happy, remain quiet, do your work as well as you can, keep yourself always open to me, that is all that is asked from you.
That's beautiful and really simple.
Yeah.
And I think it works.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, this is not to say this isn't really difficult. You go into, there's a framework of, and sometimes I think it's it's a physical framework in the what Mother and Tribhuvana call the physical mind, the mind that has created your body out of, and my body and everybody's body, out of the experiences that we have in life and the equipment that we came into life with and the things that people do with us and the reactions. And there's like frameworks. We seem to have internal organizers inside to set these things up. And so you get rid of one framework and behind that framework there's another framework. And then behind that framework, these things are so many and so deep and so subtle. And it seems like the more we become conscious of them and the more we just want to give them up and the more they go, the happier we get and the simpler we get and everything becomes better. But we are still pioneers. This is the pioneers. We are the new people who are now doing this. And it's certainly not being done all over the world in the conscious way that people here know how to do it.
Maybe it's not done in a conscious way, but it's happening because it's... really, I see actually outside more dedication to really reach and go beyond.
Yeah, maybe no, it's true.
Than maybe here in Norway, because it's like attitude, yeah, we are already pioneers, so we don't need to even... The thing is here, and we all have to deal with it, yeah.
We all have to deal with it.
So how do you feel with you? I mean, do you feel any... I don't know how to say.
Yes, of course I do. What are you going to say? Do I feel any change? Do I feel any lightness?
Yes, I mean, like, even because... I know that in some cases that even transforms on the physical way.
Yeah.
I don't know how to express
it. No, well, you've expressed it, of course. I mean, that's what I came here for, and that's what I'm trying to do, and that's where I put all the focus of my thoughts and feelings, and I can certainly see a change. I can see a lightening. I can see better health. I can see more consciousness of the presence of Sri Aurobindo guiding me. I feel better, you know, and it's, finally, what can you aspire to? Good health and happiness. That's the bottom line. Because what does that really mean? It means the whole yoga. Mm. It's like when I first came here. And 72, and I didn't know anything. I had some experience, and I heard about the mother, and so I came because of that. And the mother put me out in Oroville, and we were supposed to practice human unity. Mm-hmm. And then it's very clever, because human unity encompasses every bit of Sri Aurobindo's yoga. If you are really going to consciously get along properly with all the people around you, It's a deep and intense yoga practice all the time to really do it.
I understand.
So yeah.
Now let's go back. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just finished the book 7.
No, not at all.
It's book 7, Canto 3.
Yes. Yes. Sorry.
So, and you're taking a short break because you are traveling. So where you're going?
Oh, I'm going to France.
And for what?
I'm going to go visit all the places that the mother lived. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to see the artwork of an unknown impressionist painter, who I was an art major in college, and I had art history classes, and I never heard this woman's name, and no one I have talked to knows about her. And I bought a book about her in 1996 or 97. I was in Paris looking at impressionist paintings, and I wanted to buy books. And here was this book. And the book says no one ever heard of her. And when she was alive, she was decorated very highly by France, and her paintings are all over France. No one's talking about her.
What's her name?
Her name is Blanche Audin.
Blanche Audin. She was connected to the mother maybe somehow?
I feel that she probably was.
Because it was the same period, more or less.
Exactly. She was born in 1865. Mother was born in 1878. And Blanche was one of the few women who had her own atelier in Paris, because during the Impressionist period...
There were men.
And the men didn't want competition from the women, and they couldn't go to school, certain schools, and they weren't allowed training in certain techniques. They made it really hard for them. And out of that, a few women braved through and got, and Blanche was one of them. Mm-hmm. And she's a master and a genius, and she's a master of watercolor, although she mastered all the techniques. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I saw this book, and I wanted always to see her paintings, and there are almost none available, even though she painted hundreds and hundreds, because nobody's telling you that they have, which is really amazing.
So there was, those paintings must be in private collections.
They're all in private collections, except for about 30 or 40 of them, which are in a museum in the Haut Pyrenees, the High Pyrenees, it's called. Mm. It's a department of the Middle Pyrenees district. And her own mother told her to give them to the museum. And so they have those. And
so you're going there.
I want to be in the presence of these living works of art, because this master, this genius, dedicated her life like a religion to the perfecting of her art, and the things are so beautiful, and I am also an artist. And the book, the author couldn't find too many things to say about this woman's life, because she was a recluse. All she did was paint. Mm. So she puts in some things that this woman wrote about being an artist, and they're all things that I always thought of as an artist. Hmm. So it's
your personal journey. You're not going to have a lecture to maybe in AVF France or somewhere, no?
No, no, no. I don't speak French, and there's no... No, 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 no. I'm just going.
So you're going to find there, to find that, and probably you will find something really interesting. And you come back, you continue with, as you said, book 6, yeah?
I continue with canto 4 of book 7. Mm-hmm. Because Savitri hasn't found her soul yet. She's just at the point where I stopped reading at the end of canto 3. She's gotten through matter's body.
Yeah, I was thinking, what is the continuation? I was like, I want to...
Yeah, well, I can tell you.
I read it, but it's like, when you listen to it, it's like, huh. Okay, but now it's, you have to listen to the next one.
Well, you do, because I can't possibly read much at one time. When I have like a canto, I divide it at the point where the subject changes. Mm-hmm. And mostly it comes out in about 4-page breaks, somewhere between 15 and 18 minutes, which is a good amount of time to listen.
Yeah.
So, I think so. I mean,
it's too much. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to concentrate that much. And at the beginning of each one, I say where she is. You know, Savitri has come through this part of the being, and she still hasn't found the soul, and now she's going into this part of the being, searching for the soul. So that there is a pretty clear continuity, but I can't explain anything.
I think it's better not.
Well, the mother told the Ashramites not to try to explain Savitri. She said it particularly.
She said it only for Savitri.
I don't know that, because the only thing I happened to hear, and I didn't investigate. I mean, I just, it was sort of on the way. It was before I started doing this work. I learned, because what she said was, you take other of Sri Aurobindo's writings to explain Savitri with. And there were older teachers in the school who gave special classes where they did that. Mm-hmm. They would say, this is what Sri Aurobindo was talking about, and then they just use his words to explain it.
That's maybe a good way.
Well, I asked someone who'd been through the school, and she said, no, they didn't explain anything. They had Savitri classes, but they just read it. They didn't explain. So I'm bound by that. I feel that that's the proper way to do it. What I do is I take Sri Aurobindo's words, or I just paraphrase what he has said to put someone in context for knowing what they're going to hear next. Hmm. And I don't make any explanations. And after I had read Canto 1 of Book 7, I realized that it would be a good idea to tell the whole story of Savitri. So the storyline, so to say, is easily understood, and a person can then orient themselves as to where it is in the whole story. But I couldn't explain it. And I've done this before. I love this story. It's like the most wonderful fairy tale. I mean, Sri Aurobindo has taken the classic form of myth and fairy tale and used this form to create all these inner journeys for the yoga. I love it. And so I kind of know it, and I've told it very simply before in my own words, and now I realize I should not do that. So what I did is I went through the whole book, and I took out excerpts, chronological excerpts, and every now and then I had to, like, just say that something was happening because it wasn't right to read those things. Like I would say, now Sri Aurobindo is entering into further darkness, and then I could quote something. So that's as far as I get, you know, for explaining. And that took two full recording sessions. I think it was about 45 minutes each. And so that's already uploaded on the radio. It's called The Story of Savitri, Part 1 and Part 2. And what I've done with the different cantos, because we've divided them, is I also call that Canto 3, Part 1, Canto 3, Part 2. And I think I call it the second part, because I don't want people to think that Sri Aurobindo has said that it's a part. Mm-hmm. It's just that how people can know where they are reading if they don't know that if they come in on the second part, they know they have to go to the first part first.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's a practical measure. They're different. For example, Canto 3, I had to divide into four parts because of the change of subject, and they're relatively short. Mm. And Canto 4 has really three subjects, and it's quite long. So when I come back and start reading Canto 4, the reading will have to be longer by necessity. I'm just trying to follow the flow, you know, and just try to understand what's the right thing to do.
But I think anyhow, Savitri is something that one might read for years to actually understand. Because with the some philosophical writings or religious writings is that you read them, you don't really understand, but it's like when you're reading and reading and reading, all of a sudden the meanings comes to you. Okay, that is that.
Mm.
And I think Savitri is pretty much the same thing, that you cannot just read it like a novel and say, okay, I know what it's about.
Exactly.
Because it might happen the next day you will open the same sentence and you will see completely different meaning, or you will said, okay, you will finally understand it. Okay, that is that.
I suspect that there are so many meanings. There's probably a meaning for each person that reads it, actually, and a meaning each time the same person reads it. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons that Mother said don't try to explain it, because somebody is sitting in front of a class and they are known as a teacher and they say, okay, this means this. It's fixed. You know, the class will accept it at least for a certain period of time. And first of all, it's that person's idea limited by whoever they are. And second of all, there are so many explanations and levels and things that come and connections that you make and stuff. So it is something that you're going to read absolutely for your whole life. And I tried with this idea that I should not explain. I once, with one of the parts of the cantos, I went to the letters on yoga. And I thought, okay, I'll explain it by reading something that Sri Aurobindo says about it. And so when I wrote my notes, I included a couple of these things. And then as I was reading at home and rehearsing it, I could see it wasn't right, because those letters, those in particular anyway, came from a kind of intellectual level and from a different impulse of communication. And the same thing that is said in this poetry and Savitri has so many more levels to it, not in the intellect or the mind, but in the resonances. The poetry is so beautiful and it carries you away, and it's like a music that you're somehow, everything in your body is dancing to. And I think that must change us. That has to change us. And so if you look at it from something that Sri Aurobindo has written in a particular letter to a particular sadhak talking about the same subject, you're not going to get the same thing out of it.
No, for sure not. But I just remember, since you were talking like a music, so you're giving this to Savitri a new dimension, which is a frequency, because automatically does the sound, it does physically touch us.
Yeah.
And with the meaning, so actually it's good. So people have another option how to receive it.
Yeah, yeah. Mother said about any book that the book contains the presence of the person who wrote it, because they pour themselves into the book. Mm-hmm. So to apply this to Sri Aurobindo's writings is fabulous for us, because it's a radiating presence, it's a transmitting presence, because that's its purpose.
You also feel special when you read those parts of Savitri, right?
I'm in another place. I love it. I love it. It just, I mean, by the time I'm finished, it takes me up somewhere so fabulous that it's just wonderful. But I always try to feel like I'm opening to Sri Aurobindo's force coming inside me. Mm-hmm. But when I read it, because I feel like I want to understand myself at least something somehow of what I'm reading when I read it. That takes a lot, because I'm sure I don't a lot of the time, but I have to at least understand enough to read the sentences properly, and sure, to, you know, when a word follows another word and I don't pause and things like that. It's a multifaceted effort, and I have to call for help, because I want it to just come out right.
Otherwise, what are you busy with?
Oh, at the moment, absolutely nothing else. I'm winding everything down, and I'll start picking up things again when I come back. But this is a wonderful work to have, because I have to prepare.
Sure.
And I have to read, and I have to rehearse, and, you know, I have to figure out how I'm going to explain to people where we are in the book. And more of my time goes just into receiving the force in a very direct way.
To be prepared, yeah.
And that's all we're supposed to do. You know, you said you haven't read much of Sri Aurobindo. I never read any of Sri Aurobindo, because it put me to sleep for years.
Really?
Yeah. When I was first here and I was staying in Golkhand, I got the idea of painting from Savitri, and I didn't know that Huta made Savitri paintings. I wasn't in those kind of things. I was really being very solitary and inner at the time I was in Golkhand. And otherwise, I'd been in Oroville, and I didn't know much about that. So I'd sit with the book, and I'd just pray to be given something to paint, and I'd open the book, and I'd see the thing on the page, and I'd know. I could see it. I'd know what to paint. And that's how I started reading Savitri, because I couldn't read it. I read a half a page and I literally went to sleep. So that was a great gift, because that was the best gift for me, because I was able to start, you know, reading Savitri. But Sri Aurobindo's other books, I didn't connect with very much at all. No, it was only many years later when I started.
It's probably it's not easy. They are not easy things to read, to understand it.
Mm-mm.
Because
I don't think you have to.
It's a complexity of everything, I think.
Yes, exactly. But I don't think you have to read that to get the force. You just have to read anything.
No, because that's what we were talking in the beginning. That I feel it, that the force is here, and it does touch everybody wanting to know. Mm. It's just the question how we react. And sometimes you see that it's really a struggle, and you think it might be an easier way somehow.
Well, you pick up a book, but not Sri Aurobindo's long and complex sentences, but anything, you know, Mother's Simple Talks to the Children, or anything.
Really resonates.
Just because it gives you the vibration, you know, whether or not you want to follow the meaning, and that anyway is not the point, to intellectually label it and put it somewhere. Just the vibration, like, radiates out of the book. So if you spend your time just reading some of those words, that actually carries you a little farther to actually quiet down when all the being is in revolt and, you know, we are full of resistance and or ego or anything. Just if you can't do anything else, just sit down and read something in the book, anything to get the moment to pass and keep going. I really thank the radio for asking me to do this because I absolutely love it. And I hope that everything works out and we can really, really get through the all of Savitri.
We'll do it.
Good.
Loretta, thank you.
You're welcome.
And have a safe journey.